We all have a reason for drinking. Recovery is finding that reason and then figuring out what you're going to do about it. I have such a clear picture in my mind of what that looks like because I have two different versions of sobriety. I have just being sober and then I have actual recovery. I am so much happier and healthier now that I'm addressing all of the things that I've spent the last decade running from.
This is Mind Body Matters with Greg Rennie and Rob Reiford.
Welcome to Mind Body Matters, and here's my producer and very good friend, Rob Reiford.
Thank you, my good friend, Greg Rennie.
We're still friends, right?
I hope so. I didn't get the memo. are we still friends or what?
I just figured that, you know, we've known each other for many years, but we're doing the podcast. So maybe, you know, we're at a point where we're sick of each other and you hate my guts. I don't know.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Okay. No, right. No. Right. We talk in addition to this podcast, we talk on the phone all the time. And I would still consider you one of my best buddies. So there you go.
Oh, thank you.
And speaking of which, It brings us to the topic of today's conversation on Mind Body Matters. I remember years and years ago, my sister had talked to you about alcoholism. And what came out of that conversation with my sister and you was is a phrase I'd like to repeat to myself over and over again, that alcoholism is the most patient disease in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I probably passed that along years ago.
Oh, you did.
Because that's what I experienced, you know. But I remember, you know, I just got sober and you were still drinking. And that's one thing I wanted to pass along to you and your sister that, yeah, it is. It's very patient. It crept up on me for many years.
Yeah, exactly. And today on the show, we have a Steve Knapp and Julie Miller. Mm-hmm. And they have a podcast called Through the Glass Recovery Podcast. Mm-hmm. We had a chance to talk to Steve and Julie prior mm-hmm. to today's interview.
And I was on their show, so which was a nice segue into this show. I was on their show. Yeah,
that's right. So it's a little tit for tat today.
Yeah, yeah. A little reciprocal thing going on.
Exactly. But they're great people. And we'd like to welcome them to the Mind Body Matters podcast today.
Yeah, just a few things that they are both certified recovery coaches. And we're going to talk about this. This is I think you came across this on their website and in their podcast notes. But I really like what they have to say here. They said, where we believe that connection is the opposite of addiction, vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and that recovery isn't just rewarding, but it's a lot of fun. I agree with everything they've said there.
Yeah, recovery can be a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. It is.
And it's about people sharing. And that's exactly what we're going to do today on Mind Body Matters. Please welcome Steve Knapp and Julie Miller. So we're here. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, so excited to be here.
So on that question about how you guys met, like how does a Canadian-American get together and do a podcast?
How do they?
Go for it.
We met each other at a online recovery meeting. Like we were both decided to get sober during the pandemic. So during the pandemic, you couldn't go to a meeting in person or anything like that. Julie living in a small town, that wasn't an option for her. That wasn't an option that she wanted to use. And I mean, when I was going to online meetings, because that's what was available, and so I started going to this different online meeting, and then she showed up and we kind of built a friendship just through recovery. And it didn't take us too long to start putting headsets on and recording a podcast together. We started pretty early on.
Julie, where are we talking to you from today?
I live in a tiny little town in western Colorado. So I live just about an hour away from the Utah border on the western slope. Yeah, there's the population for Colburn, Colorado is 369 people. So when I stopped drinking, going to, like, we have an AA meeting here everybody in this town is going to know why my car is parked outside of the medical clinic on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, right? Like, everybody knows my car and everybody's going to know why I'm there. And that was the last thing I needed. So when I found online Zoom recovery meetings as an option, that seemed like my best bet.
And Steve, you are a Canadian, and I believe you're up near the St. Clair River, I understand.
I am, yeah. It's just outside, a little town just outside of Sarnia, Corunna, Ontario.
Corunna.
Right now.
Yep. I actually have family up that way.
Do you?
Yes, in a Courtrai.
Oh, yeah, Courtrai. That's just down the road.
That's just down the road, yeah. So,
yep.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you both. And by the way, congratulations. Your podcast is now over a year old.
It is.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you. On season two, it's been a journey. It's been a really amazing journey because we have 2 to 3 guests on each podcast. So you can imagine how many we have returning guests. We have new guests, but we've met some really incredible people so far just through social media, people all over the world, UK, all over the US and Canada, from the West Coast to the East Coast. So it's been really inspiring.
Our podcast, Through the Glass Recovery Podcast, for your listeners, it's all about growing in recovery and all of the things that a person needs to address in their life to really keep moving forward. And the amazing part is that it's really been a huge part of my recovery and Steve's recovery. Like, it helps us grow, and it continues to keep us moving forward also. So it's just on every level been so beneficial to our lives and our listeners.
Sort of like our podcast. We didn't realize what the heck we were doing when we got started. And then all of a sudden, we realize that we're making a difference and we're helping people. And
yeah,
basically, that's what it's all about.
It is. Yeah, I think at the beginning, yeah, you're right. At the beginning, there was a lot of interviews with people that I knew because I'm a psychotherapist. I never wanted to kind of focus on myself as a psychotherapist during the show. But we did interview a lot of people that I knew. So there was like doctors and psychiatrists at the very beginning. And then later on, you know, it became more about people's personal journey. Rob and I talked more openly about our addiction. Actually, we did in the first episode. Hey, Rob, we talked about that, you know, we come from a place of alcohol use and abuse. And let's talk about our stories. Julie, Steve, who wants to go first? I mean, how did you get here and how bad was it? We want to hear the juicy stories.
No, I'll go first.
All right. Load the gun.
Yeah. I think this kind of fits in with what we're kind of focusing on today, which is the difference between sobriety and recovery. So I would say, you know, I didn't start out being addicted to alcohol really young. I know a lot of people do. It took a long time for that to really settle into my life. So I was maybe 28 or 29 before alcohol really became a problem for me. And, you know, it ramped up. It got worse and worse and worse. I didn't have some big dramatic rock bottom for a really long time. So in 2019, I knew I needed to stop drinking, and I finally managed to stop. Obviously, anybody who's ever clawed their way out of addiction knows how hard that is to do. And like we said before, I live in a really small town. I didn't have support. I didn't know there were Zoom online meetings. I didn't know about any of the amazing resources on the internet. So I quit completely alone. I didn't tell anybody what I was going through. I mentioned to my husband that I was going to stop drinking. I never said I have a problem. I never told him how hard it was to get through every single day. He thought it was like I was quitting for like a health kick or whatever. And so I kept it all inside. I kept it. And anybody who's ever stopped using drugs or alcohol knows how hard it is just to get through one day at a time, especially in those early days. I managed to stay sober for 14 months just on my own. And then eventually I drank again. I just had a really bad day and I knew there was a beer in the fridge. And so I went down and I grabbed it and I drank it. And that started the ball rolling again. It started rolling a lot faster the second time through. And within 6 months, I was drinking every day. I was back to like even more problematic drinking than I had been. I got to the point where I was drinking at 8 o'clock in the morning just to kind of kill the hangover from the night before. And we're talking like homeschooling my children, being like super mom, running a 40-acre ranch and doing all of this while basically being either drunk or at least buzzed all day long. And that lasted about 6 months until I finally hit my full-blown rock bottom, wrecked my car, had a drunken, raging psychopath moment on the side of the road in front of all my neighbors. Mortifying, humiliating, huge moment, greatest moment of shame probably in my entire life. And that's kind of what sent me towards this second round of recovery.
Well, have you ever driven your car into a light post in front of the city hall?
I have not, but a fence post in front of my neighbor's house. So, I mean, and when you live in a town of 300 people, it doesn't take long for all 300 of them to know exactly what happened.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Well, put it this way. I'm in a community, Stratford, Ontario, and it's a population of approximately 35,000. And when I mentioned about the light post in City Hall, that happened to me back years ago. It was in 2006, I believe.
And you got in the papers. So I'm not sure if Julie got in the papers.
I was on TV. Yeah. I was in the papers. Oh, yeah. Now, like you said, not everyone has a so-called quote-unquote rock bottom, but it's a way of getting there. And by the way, you mentioned children. How many children do you have, Julie?
I have two kids. I have two daughters. One of them is 20 and has moved out. The other one is 16. She's a junior in high school. So I've homeschooled my kids. I've been a stay-at-home mom my whole life. And I've homeschooled them all the way through. They never did go to public school. So I'm 2 years away from the end of the tunnel. It's been a great experience. It's been a lot of fun. But definitely, that's been the main focus of my life for the last 20 years. So,
And Steve, your story...
Well, I kind of like Julie's, like alcohol. I never even really started drinking alcohol until I was like early 20s. And then after I started working and getting into industry and stuff like that, I started drinking. But it never really became a problem until later on in my later 20s, between 25 and 30. And then it just progressively got worse through my 30s. Like I have a hard time remembering a good chunk of what my 30s looked like. For the most part. So for me, like it got to the point where the last year of getting into the thick of things, I was driving to, I would have a bottle in my truck and I would drink a third of a bottle on my way into work. I would then go for a drive on my lunch and drink the other third of the bottle and then pick up some more. And then on my way home, I would drink the last third of the bottle and then whatever, you know, depending on the day. So, I mean, that was my morning until my morning and afternoon until about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And then it was whatever I drank after dinner or with dinner and whatever. So I woke up and I was throwing up every morning, almost five to six mornings out of the week for about a year.
Wow.
Like, and that was normal to me. Like, there was like, that was, I woke up nauseous and I would just go through the motions again and again and again and just suffer through that and then do it all over again. Like, the insanity of it all, right? Like, that's now my new normal. Like, it just became my new normal and, you know, the shakes, the whole deal. But I never really had anything drastic happen. My wife found my credit card bill.
Uh-oh.
So we had separate credit card bills. She found my credit card bill one weekend and found it on a Saturday. She found it on the Sunday and she opened it. We always had separate accounts and separate everything else. And then she waited until the evening and then she came up to me and said, can you explain this? And I had a friend that was deep in his addiction and people were aware of it. And so she was hoping I would say that I was buying it for him. And I had this moment when she brought that up and I it was just, the lie was too hard to carry anymore. Like I was in pain. I was just, everything was being held together by threads of yarn that it was like, it was just a matter of time before life was going to completely just unravel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was done. I was just done. So I told her the truth.
Good for you.
That night,
I just told her the truth. That was not a good conversation for either of us. And I told her that, you know, that's there's I drank and drove and all of that stuff, and sent an email the next morning to an AA meeting because that's all I knew existed. I didn't even know there was any other methods of recovery out there. I had no idea. I just knew that AA existed. So I got a hold of them and went to a meeting the next morning. The next evening, I called work and told work that I had a problem. I came out right away. Like my first week of recovery, I told HR at work that I had an alcohol problem. We had my wife's family over for dinner, and I told them I had a problem and I needed help. And I called my parents and I told them I had a problem and I needed help. I told all of my immediate family within the first week of quitting drinking, which was absolutely terrifying. Like I cried like a baby a ton, because admitting that you have a problem, there's so much shame in that. Oh yeah. It was pretty unbearable and super embarrassing. Like I can't control my life. I obviously couldn't. Here I am, I started going to AA meetings, and then eventually I found a method of recovery that I connected to. And it's not really a method. It was just people sharing their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at now still. Like this is that's where my growth is. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that's where I ended up meeting Steve. So he was about 6 months sober when I first quit the second time around. And the second time around, I happened on this app. It's called I Am Sober. It's just an app you can download. But on that app, there's a community of people who were talking about their addiction. That was the first I had ever heard of other people talking about what they were going through. So that whole first time I quit drinking, I thought I was alone. I couldn't imagine anybody else was hiding something as big as I was hiding and had so, you know, all of those things that I was feeling. I didn't realize everybody who struggles with addiction feels those same things. And so to see the people in this community writing posts, it's almost like a social media app, right? Except just for people who are fighting addiction. And so there would be post after post of the things that people were dealing with and their regrets and their shame and, you know, all of their different struggles. And so that was the foundation for my second round of sobriety and where I am now. And that came with the connection and it came with the work. You know, we talk about the work of recovery. And I had the whole first time I was sober, I had no idea what that looked like. I didn't have anybody to guide me. I didn't have anybody to demonstrate or share anything with me as far as what that looked like. So I just white knuckled it through every single day for 14 months. And the second time around, it's just been a completely different experience. And again, you know, the difference between sobriety, which is where you just aren't drinking, physically have stopped drinking, and recovery, where you're really starting to address the deeper issues. And so, yeah, Steve found that community when he was 6 months. Oh, like, yeah.
I found the community on day six because I was like, I don't know what day how many days have I been sober? I was my brain fog was so bad. It was like a Saturday and I was sitting on the couch and I'm like, how many days have I been sober? And I put because I knew what my sobriety date was, right? And so I put the date in there and I was like, oh, I found something, because I thought it was a day counter. And I was like, wow, I'm 6 days sober. Hey, look, there's a whole community of people here. So I started out on that app on day six. Like my whole recovery journey is written on that app. Like I've got that whole entire history of like from day six onwards.
I was just going to say, what I find amazing is when I used to go to AA meetings, we didn't have all this technology and the chance to connect with people from other countries and so on and talk about it. Whereas we used to physically show up at a meeting hall or a church or something like that, and we talk. But now we have the ability to go online and reach out to people, like I said, all over the world if you need to. And here today we've got, you know, Julie over in Colorado, and then we've got Steve in Ontario, Canada.
Yeah. So I recently went to my very first in-person meeting in town. It wasn't an AA meeting. They call it an all-recovery meeting. And I had never sat down in a room with a whole bunch of other people in person before. And I told one of the guys there, I was like, my entire recovery has happened online, virtually. Like, I've never been to an in-person meeting before. And he's like, that's not possible. I was like, dang it, I missed the memo. Like, I didn't know. So here we are. This is all I've ever known is virtual recovery. And it's been amazing.
You guys sound like you're thriving, not just surviving through recovery. And that's the theme, Julie, that you kind of, you know, said we should talk about. I think it's really important to talk about, especially for people that are listening that are new to all this, thinking, oh my God, do I have to stay sober for the rest of my life? What's that going to be like? It's going to be boring. I'm not going to have any friends. But I mean, all of us have been in it long enough to know that life on the other side is pretty damn good. And it was worth all that hard work. But what does thriving mean to you, Julie, instead of just surviving?
Yeah. So, you know, we always say we all have a reason for drinking, right? Recovery is finding that reason and then figuring out what you're going to do about it. And I guess I have such a clear picture in my mind of what that looks like because I have two different versions of sobriety. I have just being sober and then I have actual recovery. And I am so much happier and healthier now that I'm addressing all of the things that I've spent the last decade running from. I'm able to move through them and work through them and find healthier ways to address them. And it just changes my whole life. It's changed the way I see myself. It's changed the relationships I have with other people. Everything is just so much healthier and happier now. And you can't explain that to someone. I say so often, like, I wish I could hand you a photo album of what your life could look like in a year if you just don't drink and start working on fixing the problems. You can't show somebody what it looks like. You just have to share with them your hope that, you know, that it will get better. But yeah, there's no way to even describe. If I had known years ago what my life would be like now, I would have quit so much sooner and I would have gone through all of the work and all of the struggles and all of the hard conversations and you know, facing all of the uncomfortable truths. I would have done that so long ago. I just didn't even realize that I needed to or what it would look like if I did.
Well, it feels like it's so hard to actually see the other side of it. Like the mountain seems enormous because you just can't see it. And as soon as you start actually taking a step toward the mountain, it is an amazing mountain to climb. The views are incredible. They're hard. It's just like, you know, you run a marathon. Wow, I can't do that. But then you start jogging a mile a day. And eventually you can go 1.1 or 1.2. You know, and it's Julie and I early on when we first started talking, one of the things that we thought we would try and focus on was trying to create a healthy emotional response to life. Like that was one of the things we talked about and was one of the things we worked on. And all that does is dig up all of the stuff you need to try and fix. But once you move through it once, you figure out that shovel can work for a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot brighter. Man, do I ever smile a hell of a lot more. Are you grateful? Are you guys grateful that you went through all this shit? And are you grateful for having a substance use disorder or what we call addiction? It sounds crazy when it comes out of my mouth still. But yes, absolutely, I am grateful for all of the shitty experience being stuck in that mud, feeling alone, feeling ashamed, feeling lost. Like I didn't know who I was. But without that, I wouldn't have the energy or just the drive to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I would still be lost today.
You had mentioned I was listening to one of your podcasts, and I think it was Julie who mentioned, you know, we drank to cover up our emotions, okay? And now we can actually feel our emotions, where before we used to drink to cover them up.
Yeah, I mean, the grateful thing, like Steve said, it sounds so funny, right?
No, it still does.
You know, I look around in my life and I see so many people that don't struggle with any kind of substance use disorder, and they're just floating through life. They're just letting life happen to them. They're just going through the motions of their days and their lives. I can't do that anymore. The only way I'm going to stay sober is if I approach every single day with intention. I had to dig in and really understand who I am, find my identity, find my purpose, find my meaning and for being on this earth. And that is a gift. It really is a gift. I didn't have a choice but to go through all of that and to continue going through that. I don't get to just float through life anymore. And, you know, some days I guess it's tiring and some days I need a break. But for the most part, I'm living my life with intention and purpose. And so many people never get pushed into that and they never find it on their own. And, you know, the last thing I would want is to get to the end of my life and feel like all I did was float through it with no actual drive or determination or ambition or purpose at all.
Mm-hmm. If someone decides, okay, you know, my family and my boss is saying, geez, Greg, just stop drinking. I mean, it's impacting every part of your life. So, okay, so I'm going to quit drinking, but I don't really get any help. I don't go to the meetings you guys were talking about. What is that like compared to working recovery? What is a dry drunk? You guys want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, a dry drunk is what I was the whole, and it's kind of a crass term, right? I don't like the way it sounds, but it's accurate. And that's what I was the whole first time that I stopped drinking. I was just not drinking. That's it. I stayed sober. Physically, I was not intoxicated. That was it. And there's so much missing there. But when somebody goes through that, where they're just staying sober, they're missing out on all the good stuff. They feel like they're missing out on life. They're like, you meet people that are, you know, 20 years sober that have never done a bit of work, and they're miserable and they're angry.
Yeah.
And they're just upset that they can't drink. And, you know, they feel like they're missing out on that. And it's such a sad thing to see. But you see it often in the recovery community, people who have never managed to connect with others, people who have never really dug into what's going on in their lives. And it's just a miserable existence to not have both.
The wall is still up, right?
Yeah.
The wall is still up. You haven't really let anyone in. I think one of the things between, you know, a dry drunk and someone who is in recovery is actually being vulnerable. It's the difference between what am I protecting and what am I giving away?
Yeah, and that takes us into like the topic of connection, right? Connection is what saved my life. Connection is what saved Steve. That's why we want people to understand the value of it. And Brené Brown.
Oh yes, I love her.
We talk about her all the time. when we talk about her all the time, I think she's mentioned on almost every podcast we've ever recorded. But she defines connection as being heard and understood and accepted. And until you show up, like Steve said, with vulnerability, you're not going to feel connection. You have to actually show up and let people see the real you, the you with the flaws and the shame and the things you don't want other people to see. And you've got to be willing to risk that in order for another person to tell you, hey, you're still okay. You're still worthy. You're still lovable. And to feel that acceptance. And that's where the strength and the courage to really start recovering come from.
I stopped being angry when I didn't have anything to defend anymore.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Right? What am I trying to protect? I don't have to. I don't really have to protect anything. I'm trying to protect what beforehand? I didn't even know. Just being angry and, you know, taking everything personally?
You used to be mad at the world, Steve?
I used to blame. It was interesting. I used to never thought like I was the problem. I used to never thought I wasn't the problem. The people in my life were. I had specific people. My boss at work was a problem in my life. My wife was a problem in my life. And one of the things that I wished, I still don't like saying this, but I'm going to say it is, it's truth. I wished like my boss would get hurt. Like in a car accident or something like that. So he'd be gone for 3 months because my life would be easier. And then, so I like the same with my wife. Well, if she was just gone for a little bit, then my problem would go away. Even like, that's just I'm the problem, right?
Yeah.
But that was one of the things that I wished. I was angry at the people that didn't understand me, that didn't listen, that didn't
I never tried to like play the fiddle. I just wanted to be heard. Like I was alone. I was isolated. I might as well have been screaming in a little box with nobody there, because it felt like no matter what I said, how I said it, I wasn't important. And so, and that's why I was angry at those people. Oh, that's why I was angry at life. I still had the wrong lens to look through it, but that's why I was angry at life.
That's a really important point to make too, is that in order to feel that connection, in order to feel seen and heard and understood and accepted, it has to be with the right people, right? If I were to try to talk to some of the people in my life and tell them what I'm really feeling and what I'm really experiencing and going through, I'm not going to be met with what I need to feel heard and understood. I'm going to feel shut down and humiliated and filled with shame and embarrassed. And then that's just going to encourage me to keep it all hidden and to keep it all inside, right? And that's where the recovery community comes into play, because those are the people that get it, that are going to understand what you're going through and make you feel heard and make you feel not so alone.
What is that with people that aren't part of the community, that aren't experiencing what we are experiencing or have experienced? I think in AA they call them earth people. They were, you know, separating ourselves from the average person. But why is it that other people, they can sympathize and empathize, but there is the lack of understanding? There's a lack of language. What do you think that is?
Ooh, do you want to go with this one, or do you want me to, Julie?
You can go first. Go for it.
I've met people that aren't in recovery that can have the same kind of conversation that I have with people in recovery, and I can meet them on the same emotional level. But they've had a desire to change. They've had a desire to grow. They've had a desire to look internally so they can see how they're reflecting themselves to the world. And so when it comes to someone that doesn't get it, and I've spoken to people that just don't get it, but we can meet on the same level. Absolutely. So I think I was forced into doing the work. I was forced into looking at what I needed to fix so I could see the world through a different lens, so I could change that lens into a lens of love and compassion. That's not to say that those other people don't. They just, our lenses don't match up anymore. It's not, and that's okay. They just don't match up anymore. I see the world in a different way in which that we don't align. And that's, I'm okay with that. I can meet them where they're at. And sometimes that just means we can only have a conversation about the weather or the news or whatever that may be. I want to go deeper.
Yeah, it's a lot about emotional maturity, right? Most of us weren't raised to be emotionally mature. Like, our parents did the best they could with what they had, but they didn't know how to demonstrate that or teach that. And so we all hit our teenage years and the emotions get really big. And so many of us never learn how to deal with them properly. We all find unhealthy ways to deal with them. For some of us, that's addiction. It's alcohol, it's substances. But for other people, it's just putting up a wall and shutting down and becoming completely emotionally unavailable. For other people, it's anger. For other people, it's shopping. Like, we all have a way of coping that's unhealthy. And so at the base of all of this, at the base of the ability to connect, is just your level of emotional maturity. And you don't have to be recovering from an addiction to be growing in your emotional maturity, I think, is another way to say what Steve was talking about there. I've had amazing conversations, and I've really connected with people who have also worked through to grow emotionally. We've met some amazing people. There are also so many people in this world that have never grown emotionally. And those are the people that all they can really talk about and have a conversation about is politics and the weather and what's on the news. And that's the difference. It's not even about, you know, understanding addiction. It's about understanding what's going on emotionally with ourselves and being able to have those kind of conversations that are really meaningful. And so many people just aren't capable of having those.
Often the people say that's about emotional intelligence. That seems to be a phrase that's coming up.
Yeah, the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. And that is what recovery is. It's just growing in emotional intelligence and practicing it. It's a journey. It's a thing that I think you have to practice for the rest of your life, right? And you get better and better at it, but there's always going to be opportunity to improve and grow through it.
I was just going to make a couple of points too. You know, the 12-step program, without even including alcohol in any of the equation, I mean, it's a good life map to follow, okay? Whether you drink or not, just look at the 12 steps. I keep going back to that, whether I drink or not, but I love the 12-step program. It's a way to deal with life.
It's a process to heal.
What I was going to get at, Greg, we missed the most important part of the program.
Uh-oh.
When we have guests on at the beginning, we usually ask people, what does the mind-body connection mean to you?
And I totally forgot. Yeah.
And we didn't do that.
They were more concerned about how we met.
Well,
it's like, how does someone from Ontario, Canada know someone from Colorado? And I mean, that's a valid question.
Well, and I was expecting a juicy story, for goodness sakes, you know, but I didn't get one.
No, you just, we met. We've met a whole bunch of side jumpers and stuff like that. But I mean, there's not a, like, we just met in recovery, and that's where the connection and friendship was formed.
Well, our show, as you know, is called Mind Body Matters, and usually Greg, right off the top with our guest, says, what does the mind-body connection mean to you? So, Julie, can I get your answer, and then we'll go to Steve, but what does the mind-body connection mean to you?
This question is so fitting, right, about why we're here, what we're talking about, and the difference between sobriety and recovery. Sobriety is simply the act of, like, physically not drinking. And of course, that's going to benefit the body. But until we involve the mind and the healing, the mental, emotional, the healing, the pain that we're using alcohol to escape from, we never truly become whole. We're never really recovering from our struggle with addiction. So absolutely, the mind and the body are intertwined and completely interdependent when it comes to talking about healing from an addiction. One doesn't happen without the other.
Definitely get over the physical part of my addiction to alcohol, but I need to fix my thinking to coincide with healing the body, right? Like, it's they both go hand in hand. If I can fix the thinking that got me to where I got to, I can go heck of a lot farther.
That's the difference between surviving and then thriving.
When you open up your show, Julie and Steve usually says, describe your show. What are there were four things that you describe your show as, the podcast.
You're talking about our intro.
You're the intro. Yeah. Could you repeat that for everyone who may have not heard that yet?
So we say, welcome to Through the Glass Recovery Podcast, where we believe that connection is the opposite of addiction, vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and that recovery isn't just rewarding, but it's also a lot of fun. And then we say, listen as we get together with friends, experts, and influencers to shed light on the hard things, talk about the other side of addiction, and how we create a life so full there's no space left for alcohol.
I thought that was really well written.
Oh yeah, it is.
It stuck with me. So I wanted to make sure that we brought that up during our podcast today, because I thought it was well thunked out. That's what I thought.
Thank you.
I'll give Julie the credit for that, because she was the bulk of writing that line.
I'm the words behind this operation, and Steve is the face and the social guy. So we. Between the two of us, I'm behind the scenes. I do a lot of the content creation and you know, the website and all of that. Steve's out there talking to all the people, and yeah, so we do a pretty good job of splitting the work. But I'm the quiet, shy one. I'm the introvert here.
What we try and do, even on our social media page, is we try and bring up some of the seriousness of recovery, like sometimes, you know, the hard questions. What dig, right? That's what it's all about, taking out the shovel and finding out that little inner piece that needs to be healed. And then we also try and bring the fun. We have the bright colors. Recovery is fun. There's so much. I've smiled and laughed until I've cried so many more times in this last 2 years and 8 months than I have in the past two decades. I'm doing something right. Something's happening right to feel all of, like, I'm letting myself feel all of this all over again. And it's just wonderful. This is amazing.
There's a lot of joy in recovery.
There is.
And when you first think about not drinking, when you're first faced with the idea of never drinking for the rest of your life, right? Oh my God. Like, all you can think about is like being sad and lonely and not having fun anymore and all of that. I never had any idea how much joy I would feel. I'm not sure I really felt honest joy before I stopped drinking. I was so worried about numbing all of my emotions, and you can't selectively numb, right? You can't numb all of that hard stuff that you're trying to run from without numbing all of the good stuff too. It's not possible.
You go flat, right?
Exactly.
Flat kind of feeling.
Exactly. And I don't think most of us didn't realize, like, we thought we were having fun. We thought we were happy. We had no idea what we were missing. And that's something we, I guess, try to share.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
It did.
For sure. There's a reason we were all drinking, and there's a reason, yeah. You know, for sure there was.
I don't know where that point was, where it's like it worked until it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there is a point there where, like, the scale went, and then it was, okay, we're good. And then then downhill, and it's so progressive and so insidious.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with my sister just the other day, and she reminded me of something that Greg had mentioned to her and to me years and years ago. And it was alcoholism is one of the most patient diseases.
Mm.
One of the most patient diseases. And that struck me. And my sister and I talked about that this week.
That's from personal experience, you know, that I said that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why it really stuck with me. So, and that was, my goodness, that's got to be 15, 20 years ago, right? Greg, when that was first introduced to me.
Yeah. I mean, alcohol was my best friend. And you know, Steve, you're talking about the progression, you know, and I relate to that. It was my best friend. And what I call the nasty trick is that, how can this warm, comfortable blanket that we've created with our substances turn on us? But it does, you know. It's like your best friend turning around and stabbing you, you know. It works until it doesn't work, but it is so patient, because I've seen it, looking back, how long it took for me to come to understanding what it was and what I need to do about it. But there's many, many years it was just racking up the points. False narrative of self-abandonment, right? Mm. It just
takes more and more of who you are, right? And like Steve said, self-abandonment. When I stopped drinking, I had no idea who I was. I didn't know what I enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what my values were as a person. I had always just adopted all of the, you know, why put in the thought when you can just adopt somebody else's? I had to completely rediscover myself and who I was. That was a huge part. So I know you guys talk about 12-step, and I've never used a 12-step program. I've never been through the steps. I've never been to an AA meeting. It's never been a part of my story. What I did do this second time around, when I realized I had to start doing some work, was I found a book called Rewired by Erica Spiegelman. And it's kind of I think she says it's like a holistic approach to addiction recovery. I can't remember exactly how she words that. But in a way, you end up covering all of those steps. You just do it in a very different way. And you do it, and, you know, I mean, by the time you finish going through this book, it's fair to say you've probably done most of the steps. It just doesn't look the same. But the very first piece of that book is authenticity, understanding who you really are, taking off all of the masks, letting down all of the walls, letting people see your flaws, learning to accept yourself and love yourself just the way you are. And for me, that was a long process. That was the foundation of my entire recovery. And it's something I still go back to and talk about a lot because so many of us lost ourselves. You know, I was addicted to alcohol, but I was also addicted to validation from other people.
Oh my God,
which showed up as perfectionism. I'm as much a recovering perfectionist as I am a recovering alcoholic, right? In fact, it's harder to quit the perfectionism, I think, sometimes. But that's the stuff you have to let go of in order to move forward in your recovery, to start growing in all of these other ways. Authenticity has to be the foundation. And so that's something that I talk a lot about and I go back to, and I have to check in with myself sometimes too. Like, am I being real here? Or am I, you know, trying to juggle all of the balls everybody thinks I should be able to juggle in order to fit their, you know, the way they think I should be? It's easy to fall right back into those patterns. And so I think it's something we have to keep staying aware of as we move through life and as we move through all of these new experiences.
It's an interesting book, the Rewired book. If you, because I started out in AA, I've only ever made it to step three. I would say I've done the rest of it because I followed Julie through her journey through Rewired. But if you, I've read the 162 pages of the big book three times. It is a modern version rewritten by a woman that takes it and it doesn't turn it into steps, but it turns it into how to actually just live your life through the same thing. But it's not a, you know, I'm doing a step three or four or five or whatever. You're not on this like general path of like climbing a ladder. You know, it's not a linear thing. Recovery isn't linear anyways, but it walks you through that same journey in a really interesting, really neat, and really well-written way. It's a short book. It's a really short book. But if you, just like the steps, if you work it, it will work. Mm-hmm. Exact same.
I think, and this is something else Steve and I talk about a lot. There are so many different ways to do the work and to find recovery. And I know people think AA is the only option. When Steve quit drinking 2.5 years ago, he went to AA because he didn't realize there were other options.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I know people that have gone to an AA meeting or two or 10 and just don't feel like it's the right thing for them, but they think that's the only option.
Mm-hmm.
So they give up and they go back to drinking because it's not working for them. And that, to me, is where it gets dangerous. AA works great for so many people. And I mean, we can't deny all of the benefit and all the thousands and thousands of lives that it has saved. But I feel like the danger is when someone doesn't connect with it and they don't know that they have other resources and they don't know that they have other options. And so they just give up and they go back to drinking. I mean, we've got Rewired is a great program if it's something you choose to use or if it connects with you. Steve and I are both certified recovery coaches. So we can actually work one-on-one with someone to figure out what they're needing in their life to start healing and start recovering. And, you know, there's Celebrate Recovery and Recovery Dharma and Smart Recovery. There's all these other different programs and different meetings that we host, an online meeting, just like the one that saved us. And it's free to everybody. Anybody can come and hang out, you know, on Zoom and have the kind of conversations we have. There's just so many possibilities. And that's a big part of what Steve and I do, is try to share all of these options with people so they don't give up.
That Zoom meeting is Monday evenings at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, right? And it's every week, right?
Absolutely.
Every week, every Monday night, we're there.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to get more information, if you visit our website, which is throughtheglassrecovery.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. We're not spammy. We send out an email a week, and there's the link to the Zoom meeting, the topic for the Zoom meeting, and then we include some other resources and stuff usually too. But anybody is welcome. It doesn't, if you're in 12-step, if you're not, if you have no idea what you're doing, if you're still trying to get sober, we have people who've been sober for 42 years that come to our meetings. Anybody is welcome, and I think anybody will benefit from it.
No, that's amazing that you guys are doing that. Just winding down, Julie, you mentioned, and we were talking earlier about what we're going to cover today. You talked about hope, faith, and maintaining momentum.
Yeah. So often people, when I talk to people, either in a coaching setting or in a meeting or whatever, they get tired of having to focus on sobriety all the time, right? When you first stop drinking, it takes so much effort and so much concentration, and you're spending as much time learning how to stay sober as you did when you were drinking, you know,
right,
between the drinking and the hangover and the thinking about drinking and all of that. Like, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy. And after a while, people get tired of that. And I hear so many people say, I don't want to have to do this forever. I don't want to have to think about staying sober forever. And the message that I want people to receive is, you don't have to. What you do have to do is continue growing as a person, continue living intentionally, continue seeking, you know, how can I create more forward momentum in my life? And Steve kind of has a great analogy for what it means to, like, stay ahead of your addiction. Steve, do you want to kind of explain that one?
Kind of like it's staying ahead of it, right? I was talking one day and I was talking about, you know, it's a journey or it's a race, right? Like, there's always, if I take my foot off, I can take my foot off the gas. That's fine. But eventually, if I stop taking care of, if I take my foot off the gas on the certain things, right, the certain things that I do to take care of myself or maintain my recovery on a regular basis, I don't have to push myself until to the end or just, you know, go full bore at it all of the time. But if I let go of too much of the things that I do that are good for me, that it's going to catch up to me. Like, if I continue to avoid, because that's what I did when I was in active addiction, is avoid the things that I need to take care of. If I go back into that mindset, then it's going to catch up to me. And then I'm going to have a day or a week or whatever that may be, where I have to start cleaning up that backlog of mess.
Catch up.
So I can, I got to catch up to, I got to start cleaning up that backlog of mess so I can get ahead of it again, so I can start making forward progress. So it's more about, as in, like, the whole recovery part is what do I need to do today to take care of myself? And there's basic, it's not like this huge, big, long list of things. It's very small, and it's normally pretty simple. Talk to a person or a friend, make sure that I have a line of communication open, or whatever that means. And I can miss a couple, two or three days of that if necessary, but I'm going to catch back up and I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to reach out to a friend and make sure that they're good and they're going to ask me. And there's just very simple things. I'm going to journal because that's what I do. Read a little bit of self-care. I'm good to go. Light me up for the rest of the day. Just a little bit taking care of yourself so it doesn't catch up. So it doesn't get... There's like a tension that sits in the back. And if I let it sit there for too long, I have to do something about it. I got to break that tension.
What I find is I'm just amazed at both of you and your optimism through this whole journey. It's great.
I don't know. It's just proven over and over again how great it is. Even, and Steve says this sometimes, when we're drinking, the bad days overshadowed the good days. Everything just kind of felt dark and sucky, right? Now in recovery, we still have bad days, but the good days outweigh the bad every time. One bad day doesn't ruin your entire week the way that it did when you were drinking. And it's all in your perspective and your mindset and the way you choose to look at it.
Perspective is the key word there too.
Absolutely.
Just the way we look at things and our ability to look at things in a sober mind. So
I never realized before I was like this forever optimist. Julie will attest to this.
She just look at her smile and nod.
I am. I'm like, it'll work out. And she's like, no, it's not. And I mean, I'm censoring myself right now.
right?
But... It is. I didn't know I had this such a positive attitude and such a like this positive outlook on life. Like, if I keep trying and if I keep plugging away at this, this is going to work. It might not. I don't have this image anymore of what I'm supposed to fit things into.
Mm-hmm. I know that if I just keep plugging away, something that looks like where I'm going to happen. And it's going to be cool, and it's going to be fun, and it's going to be amazing. It hasn't let me down yet. It just hasn't. So
Steve is our natural optimist here. That doesn't come so naturally to me. But one thing that I've learned, and I think this is really important, is what you believe you will manifest. If I believe everything is going to suck today, everything is going to suck today. If I believe I'm walking into a situation and I'm going to be miserable, I'm going to be miserable. I can choose how things are going to go. Our mindset and our perspective have a huge amount of impact on our actual experiences in life, whether it's something small like just going to a social event, or whether it's, you know, your entire life as a whole. It's so much of it is in your mindset. Your brain has so much more power than most people understand or give it credit for.
I have so much choice. Everything. I have everything that happens, even around me, I have a choice. I get to choose how I react to it, how I respond to it, how I see it. And then I get to choose what I can do about it, or what to not do about it.
You can choose between reacting and responding now, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Like, all of this stuff is a choice. There was a quote that I saw not too long ago that just gut punched me, and that was, anger is a punishment I give to myself for someone else's behavior.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And I was like, ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, we offer them rent in our head.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's just...
And the rent is costly. The rent is costly in your head.
Yeah.
It's like my sister saying, and Greg knows this one, but it's become a favorite one of mine, and it is, awareness brings choice, and choice brings freedom.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's great. Yeah.
Talking about quotes, we end our show asking the guests what their favorite quote is. And Steve, thanks for sharing that. But do you know, I'm putting you on the spot, do you know who the author of that one was? You
know? I do not know the author of that quote. I saw it on a TikTok video. It was some guy on the street who said it. And I was like, it got me good. Yeah, I can't take credit for it, but that's right now that has been like my favorite quote. I am such a quotes guy. I love quotes because there's so many of them that just...
Maybe that was written by Anonymous, because he wrote a lot of things.
Anonymous did write a lot of things.
He wrote tons of things. Yes, he wrote... Yeah.
He's quite a philosopher. Julie, you said you have a quote that is from Picasso. Do you want to share that before we wrap up?
Yeah, definitely. So this quote, and I love it so much. The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away.
Wow. To give back.
I believe so much. We all have a gift. Sometimes we don't know what it is right away, but the adventure in finding our gift is amazing in itself. And once we do have it, every single person in this world has a gift that they can share with the rest of the world and make it a better place, whether it's just sharing it with the people in your immediate life, or whether it's sharing it with people, you know, when you're on a podcast or whatever it is. We all have a gift to share.
Well, we thank you very much for your gift to us today on our podcast. And it was really nice meeting you, both of you.
You too. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for so much for the opportunity.
I agree that, being on your show, right? So being in the other seat, that your gift is giving back in a way of creating a community and also a voice for people to come on your show and talk about recovery. And also the important things, what we talked about today, is that, yes, AA is great and it works for a lot of people, but there are other alternatives. And you guys, are a testament to the fact that there are other ways that are very successful. Thank you so much for sharing your gift with us today. I appreciate your time, and maybe we'll do this again sometime. Would love to be back on. Yeah, love to have you back on too.
We should have Rob on your show, because I was just on your show myself, right? So we should have Rob on your show and really drill down how he crashed into City Hall. We probably would love to kind of get a little bit more details. And then, you know, how, you know, what they said in the papers and, you know.
Everyone loves war stories. They really do.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
Once again, Steve Knapp and Julie Miller, their website is throughtheglassrecovery.com. And as they mentioned, they have Zoom meetings every Monday night, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. So check out their website, throughtheglassrecovery.com. Again, thanks, guys.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
So, Rob, what did you think of that? What did you think about meeting Julie and Steve and looking at alcohol use in the way that they see it?
Well, number one, I like their attitude.
I like their humor.
I like and they're great partners. And again, great things can happen in recovery. And one of them was Steve meeting Julie and mm-hmm. Julie meeting Steve. Mm-hmm. As I said off the top, it's all about people sharing. Mm-hmm. And they are thriving.
That's the big difference. I agree. I agree. Thriving. One thing that I noticed is that I was kidding at the very beginning about some kind of sexual relationship, which they do not have. I was just joking about that. But it does show you that you can connect with someone very early in recovery, like Julie did. It was her second time around and she met up with Steve and they bonded. That stuff happens a lot. Like both you and I went to treatment years ago and been to AA. Huge thing is identifying and connecting with other people.
Do you know that I still keep in touch?
Oh, really?
Still keep in touch with people, whether it be through rehab or AA meetings here in town, in my hometown of Stratford, Ontario. I still run into people who I went to meetings with. Or on Facebook, I keep in touch with people I went to rehab with.
I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I've kept up those relationships, and I think that's very, very important. I made mention of this in the interview, but I'm amazed at technology and where it's brought us. Keep in mind, when I was going to AA meetings, I think the internet, it was available, but they didn't have all these meetings and get-togethers or a chance to share. But through technology, Steve and Julie, they have their podcast and then they have their meetings with their people on Monday evenings at 8:30. Mm-hmm. And so through technology, I think it's a great thing. Online recovery meetings is what they're called.
Yeah. And I think the whole thing with this this edition, that's why we labeled it, you know, the way that we did, is because I think some people, as Julie said, get stuck with the fact that, I got to go to AA meetings and AA doesn't work for me, and they're stuck going because they don't know of any other difference. And I'm glad that they mentioned that. There's Dharma recovery. There's, I'm not sure if they mentioned it, but Smart recovery. There's a lot of other recovery groups that are out there, and I wouldn't want people to think that AA is the only way, and if it doesn't work, but it works for a lot of people, it worked for me, that there is other opportunities to connect, like you said, you know, connect and stay in touch.
And we have so many choices now through through technology, and I think it's great. So another friendship found through recovery, and that's what I like. So I like what Steve and Julie are doing. And let's face it, they're in different parts of the world. She's out in Western Colorado.
Yeah, yeah.
And Steve, as I mentioned, lives up off the St. Clair River in a little community called Corunna, Ontario.
Yeah.
Great place. I've got family, as I mentioned, up that way. And one of these days, I'd like to, when I'm up that way, I'm going to drop in on Steve.
That would be very cool. Yeah. A fellow Canadian, eh?
Yeah, he's a fellow Canadian, eh?
We're having a joke about that when I was on his show. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just the Canadianisms. And that's what it's all about.
About. For sure. Yeah. I'll end with this because this is something that that Julie talked about when we asked her to actually read some of their statements that they have. This is another great part of it. She mentioned it, but I just want to tie it up with this.
Yeah.
So I really encourage people to check out their podcast. It's called Through the Glass Recovery Podcast. And this is something that they talk about. They say, listen as we get together with friends, experts, and influencers to shed light on the hard things, talk about the other side of addiction, and how we create a life so full there's no space left for alcohol. So well put. That is so awesome.
They're thriving, not surviving.
Right. And there's living and there's thriving. And I got to say that in my recovery, you know, it is 100 times better than it was before. And I'm enjoying life. And yeah, got to say, it's much better sober.
And it does get better. Trust me on
that. It does. If anybody's listening that is early in recovery, it does get better. It's tough at the beginning. Push through it and you'll get the rewards that Steve and Julie talked about.
Very good.
All righty. Well, we'll be back next week. Meanwhile, everyone, be kind to yourself.
And most importantly, be well.
Be sure to like and follow us on all social media. And if you like what you hear, hit subscribe, download, and share with your friends. Mind Body Matters is a Great Media production.